Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning into the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. And Daniel, good to see you this morning.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing fine, and I thought we'd talk a little bit about Yemen, a little activity down there. It's been going on for a long time. Yeah. You know, in my own mind, I keep track of this the best I can, but if you said to me, exactly what day was it that we got involved in Yemen? All I know is we've been involved for a long time because we've been involved around the world for a long time, and we're in 170 countries now, so it's not unusual for things to get by, and no one person knows exactly where everybody is, and I think that's part of the problem. It may be that it's only the CIA that knows where everybody is, and certainly not the congressman. I mean, look, we had to struggle to try to keep up with what's going on. But, you know, there's a big issue going on. Probably some people say it's a little issue, but it's really a big issue because the UN has announced that genocide, one of the worst humanitarian disasters ever, that is serious, has been going on for years now. And the Saudis are fighting in Yemen, the Houthis, and of course, this has a lot to do with the perpetual fight with Israel and Saudi Arabia against Iran, and that's the bigger picture. But there was a growing consensus in Congress that this is going on too long, and we need to maybe go after the administration a little bit about what's going on in Yemen. So in the next year, 2019 NDAA, they said that you cannot, you know, send any more weapons. You know, you have to curtail this, back off. But that had no effect, essentially, because of the way the rules are written and the ineptness of the system and the inability for Congress to, reclaim their responsibilities, because they, none of these troops and money should have been spent unless it was explicitly, expressed by the Congress. But anyway, they said it, said no more money. And but there was a loophole, and guess what? You know, the people who sort of like these wars, and unfortunately, the administration. So Pompeo, along with Mathis, they get together and said, "Oh, you know what? If we write a regulation in saying that that the Saudis are doing nothing to protect civilians, like we've always protected every civilian in the world, you know, throughout the last 50 years, but they're not protecting the civilians, and but then they get a report and said, aha, Saudi Arabia just showed us that they, on the same day, there was about 35 more civilians killed. So, but they got around it, and therefore the funds are going to flow. And this is why this tinkering around the edges, rather than saying, are we at war, aren't we at war, who allows us to do this, who should declare it? So it's a mess, and Congress is trying to express themselves, but it looks like they don't have very much clout in even telling the administration how the money should be spent.
Yeah, it's incredible. The war's been going on forever. As we know, the Saudis invaded in 2015, so they've been attacking for 3 years. And so Congress finally utters a peep about it. As you say, they put a little thing in the NDA saying, well, you've got to certify that they're doing everything they can to avoid hurting civilians before we give you more weapons. And so, as you said, the irony is, of course, on the day that we hear about Pompeo certifying, here's what he certified, quote, Saudis and United Arab Emirates are, quote, undertaking demonstrable actions to reduce the risk of harm to civilians and civilian infrastructure. On the very day we hear about this, the Saudis go ahead and blow up yet another civilian bus, killing at least 15 or so. I just watched an absolutely horrific video right after the strike. But this comes after last month when they killed at least 40 kids in a bus. And we're right there helping them. So you're right. Congress does nothing. They do a little tiny thing. And all they want to do now is blame Trump rather than do something.
Maybe they get a little political benefit by saying, we're trying to do this. And Pompeo, I think, was the one that made the statement, we can't allow this flow of weapons into the area even to miss a day. And that's why they rushed this through. But the hypocrisy and the lying about civilians, it reminds me of a very ridiculous statement made by our Secretary of State, Albright, when the bombing was going on in Iraq. And it was recognized, and she was called on it, that 500,000 children had suffered from our constant bombing, the infrastructure destroyed, and boycotting. They didn't have food and drugs. And she said, yeah, but that's the price you have to pay. Yeah. I think that probably was one of the most damaging statements that we could have ever made. Our policies are lousy. But can you imagine what that would be like if you happen to be on the other side trying to survive? And that's what the biggest military might in the whole world says. You know, civilians, you know, that's it. So 25 more civilians or 100 here or there. And then to say that they're watching it. They're watching it. So therefore, we can keep killing them.
Yeah.
You know, it's the lying that continues. You know, if you go to war based on a lie, it usually requires many more lies, constant lies. And unfortunately, people either don't care or they don't know about it.
And we know an awful lot about Idlib, though, don't we? Constantly, the media is constantly talking about what's happening there. No mention about the resumption of the siege of Hodeidah, which is what's happening in Yemen. The Saudis backed off for a while. Then when they ramped up their siege again, there are 300,000 people there who are really under threat of starving, of dying, of being blown up when they ride a bus, send their kids to school. Don't hear anything about it. On right at the time when the Saudis restart the siege of Hodeidah, here we come with our whitewash, saying, hey, they're doing everything they can, don't worry about it. It's really quite, the hypocrisy is just glaring.
You know, and there was a supposedly meeting just recently in Geneva, and they were going to have a peace conference. The whole trouble is the Houthis didn't make it.
Yeah.
And for various reasons, but their reason was that they needed a little bit of security, you know, to go, and it was denied, and they just didn't think they would do it. I don't think they were, from what I read, it didn't look like they were, the whole purpose was to boycott it. But anyway, that was fruitless. Just gives the Saudis even more excuse. They don't even want to come and talk, so we got to settle this.
More bombs.
So, what a mess.
Yeah, it is. It's incredible. And as you said, and the real core of this is the proxy war between Saudis, Israelis, and the U.S. against Iran. And the whole idea that Iran is backing the Houthis, I think, has been debunked pretty clearly. However, the continued aggression against them is driving Iran to look to aid them because the situation is so dire. The other thing in Hodeidah, there's a grain depot. And this is holding enough grain to feed 3.5 million for a month. And now that Saudis have restarted this offensive, there's a real fear that they're going to hit this grain depot and just wipe out what little food they have for a month.
Yeah, and not much concern. You know, the individuals in Congress, the few that were there that were really pushing this, said, well, if they're going to do this, we might have to resort to invoking the War Powers Resolution. You know, the War Powers Resolution is that which was passed in 73, I believe, after Vietnam. It was to prevent us ever getting involved in a war without permission by the Congress. Well, why didn't they just read the Constitution and that would have solved it? But it was really a permission to get involved. And, you know, it was a technical thing that if we've been engaged for 60 days, then they have to report to the Congress. And if they don't, then the Congress has 30 days, and the executive branch has 30 days to get out. Well, nobody's ever really used that, and yet here's the threat. And to me, that's just another example of how weak the Congress is, and the founders must be. They would be awfully disappointed because they tried to make it where the people and the Congress would have the last say on going to war and financing war, and yet the Constitution didn't hold up, and they try to pass another one. They try to stop the little bit of funding, and they get around that quickly with a little resolution, and they just now say, well, maybe this resolution. Well, quite frankly, I don't think invoking the War Powers Resolution is going to do much good. And besides, technically, I guess they could, but you're supposed to give them 60 days. And like we said earlier, we're not even sure exactly how many days we've been there, but we've been involved, I'm sure, from the beginning, years, a couple of years now, in helping and being an ally of Saudi Arabia. And but I think the dedication to this position has been bipartisan, but I think under this administration, it is super supportive. I don't think they have any qualms about supporting this because this is seen as pro-Saudi against the Iranians.
Yeah, and you know, I think the word reform should be considered a four-letter word Because as you said, the war powers was meant to rein in the president after Vietnam. What did it do? It gave him permission to go to war without a declaration. The FISA court, remember the FISA rule? That was supposed to rein in the secret deep state after all the spying that was exposed in the Church Committee. Now, what did that do? That actually became a facilitator. The Freedom Act was supposed to be a reform of the Patriot Act. It actually legalized some of the illegal things they were doing. So reform, whenever you hear that in Washington, it's time to run away, I think.
Let me interject, though, about the FISA court. It seemed the ease with which you can get a warrant. Yeah. Putting evidence in this last election. Yeah. So it's a farce.
Some reform. But here's the ultimate irony. We went into Yemen right after 9/11. Actually, we were there before. Remember the coal in the 90s. We went in there in the 90s to fight al-Qaeda. And now, as we know, when we did a show about it and the AP has confirmed it, we're in there supporting al-Qaeda. So talk about mission creep. Talk about the horrors of interventionism. You go in there to fight al-Qaeda. A decade later, you're actually supporting al-Qaeda.
Now, that's been pretty well known. I mean, even in Syria, I mean, that's the side that we're on. But that's, you know, that is so over the top. I can imagine, and I would sympathize with the American people who would say, you know, I know we have a mess, and I know that the government doesn't do right most of the time, but that's too much. That's too much to say that, you know, that we're really in bed together. But I think we've made the point that it's not so much that we endorse everything that the al-Qaeda does as much as we use them as a tool, like we used bin Laden, you know, back in Afghanistan.
In the 80s, yeah.
And they brag about it, the people who instigated that, and yet it still is living with the devil, doing things that we shouldn't even be doing. It's opposite of, you know, non-intervention. So first they reject the Constitution, and they endorse intervention, and then it seems like it gives them license. If they can go that far on their own, they can do anything else that they want, and they generally have. And by that time, the people aren't paid much attention to you. You're not going to hear that on the news, and the process never changes. The policies stay the same, and I'm convinced the big policies, no matter how much bickering goes on, the policy stays the same. I mean, it wasn't Donald Trump who said that Assad had to go.
Yeah.
And yet he's in a position right now of trying to prevent, you know, Assad from being, regaining it. He finally accepted this idea Assad has to go, or he certainly won't tolerate him.
Yeah. You know, the bipartisan aspect of the Yemen thing and everything really is so glaring. You know, Ted Lieu, he's been gung-ho on the whole Russia thing. He hates Trump. Okay, we get it. But he's grandstanding on Twitter about how horrible Trump and Pompeo are for recertifying this. Okay, we get that too. But I browse through the legislation that he's introduced this Congress. There's not a single bill that simply says you don't have the authority. There's no money can be spent doing this, which would be the approach. There's a little piecemeal. He had a couple of little pieces of legislation that were piecemeal. But I remember back when the U.S. was thinking about going into Libya. That was when you were still in office. And you put in a piece of legislation that was really simple. It was about a paragraph long. It just simply told the president, you do not have constitutional authority to wage war against Libya without a declaration of war. Just reminding, very simple. It wasn't dancing around. So there's a lot of grandstanding going on the Democrat side, but not a lot of action.
You know, that also raises the question about, you know, if they ignore it, what happens, and does anybody understand where we are in all these different places and how they shift funds around? But, you know, the black budget that exists and the CIA, mm-hmm. I mean, they're really the instigators. I remember quite a few years ago, I was still, you know, in Congress, that I talked about, you know, it looks like to me like the CIA has committed a coup. And now when I look at some of that stuff going on with the presidential election, at that time I wasn't thinking so much of that as, you know, internationally it's a coup because they run things and they have their own financing. They have, businesses that they get involved in, like a drug business and these various things. So it's something that is very hard to curtail because they have rejected the notion of non-intervention. They rejected the notion that we should have people in Washington who have read the Constitution and really are sincere in obeying it. Instead, the people who are diehards for believing in the rule of law are un-American. You know, they're the bad guys, and they're ridiculed and made to think that they're the problem.
Yeah, exactly. And if we're ready to close it out, but I would just say, just a reminder to our viewers, government lies, government are a bunch of hypocrites. Just the day that we hear Pompeo and Mattis saying the Saudis are doing everything they can to protect civilians in Yemen, here's UN Humanitarian Coordinator Lisa Grande. She said, quote, "The situation has deteriorated dramatically in the past few days. Families are absolutely terrified by the bombardment, shelling, and airstrikes." This is in Hodeidah in Yemen. You don't hear much about it because the U.S. is on the side of bombing these people. You're going to hear a lot of endless things about Idlib, protecting Al-Qaeda in Syria. But this just goes to show how they manipulate news and lie to us, supporting some wars, opposing others. Be skeptical. Contact your congressman. If you're so inclined, we should not be supporting the Saudi war on Yemen.
You know, and I think on policy in Yemen is probably a little bit more discouraging than even what's happening in Syria, because it looks like Assad and the Russians and others look like they're doing pretty well in restoring Syria to the Syrians. But it's superficially, as I look at Yemen, it looks to me like all of a sudden the Yemenis aren't going to have their own government, and the Houthis aren't going to be represented, and that the Saudis may come out of this, you know, with total control, especially because they have us backing them up. But the only way I see this kind of thing coming to an end is the rejection of interventionism because we can't afford it anymore. And that's the way it probably will end. And right now, you know, it was just announced that the one-year trillion-dollar deficit has occurred about 6 months or a year sooner than they expected. So the deficits are skyrocketing. There were statistics I saw the other day showing the expense will be just paying the interest on the national debt, and it is exponentially growing. So things will be coming to an end. Everything is rosy on Wall Street right now, but it looks like it must not be rosy on Main Street, or there wouldn't be so much hatred going on. What are they fighting about if somebody doesn't feel like they're being hurt and damaged by another group? So right now, there's a lot of difficulties in our country. I think there's a lot of economic things. Unfortunately, they ignore the foreign policy, but eventually we have to look at them both, because it's the principle of following the rule of law and looking at the Constitution, mind our own business in all areas for moral reasons. Our lives are our own, and we should be able to run our life as we choose. And economically, it should be the same thing. People should have the right to spend their money they want, how they want, and they should be able to not have to share it with the government and decide how much they get to keep. And we don't have the right, the moral right or the constitutional right, to be involved in 170 countries. And it cannot be justified by the lies and insinuations that we're doing the Lord's work and we're out there to bring peace and prosperity to the world. Because quite frankly, we participate in stirring up a lot of problems throughout the world. And yet, I think that the answers are not difficult. We ought to just mind our own business, and I think we would move in the right direction. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.